I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome to Clifford Podcast with the Irish Examiner. Now, it's been a strange week in politics, dominated by the fallout from two referendums, or referenda, as we used to say. I'm not sure when exactly that changed in the last week. And then the whole hoopla around St. Patrick's Day, with politicians heading to every corner of the globe, and the Taoiseach habitually rocking up to the White House to be presented with nothing less than a bowl of shamrock. When you think about it, this must be the only country in the world where the national holiday is celebrated to a far greater extent outside its borders than within. Anyway, as I say, the main destination in this respect is Washington, which this year is tinged with a little controversy due to the USA's role in the ongoing slaughter and attack on basic human rights in Gaza. Now, joining us from the other side of the Atlantic to discuss all things Paddy's Day in Washington and how politics is recovering from the referendums is Irish Examiner political editor Elaine Loughlin. Elaine, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Nick.
Elaine, I suppose this would be considered by various Taoiseach and successive Taoiseach as one of the big perks of the job. Does Leo Varadkar look like he's having a good time over there?
It's hard to tell. He certainly has been doing the rounds and giving numerous speeches at various events, where it's breakfast events, lunch events. He's certainly seen the inside of a lot of reception rooms in hotels. I'm not sure if he's got to be a tourist in either Boston or Washington. He certainly doesn't revel in shaking the hands and making the contacts that, let's say, his predecessor, Enda Kenny did, or even Micheál Martin as Taoiseach would have done. He's not a man to, let's say, work the room. A lot of the events that we've been at, he certainly will speak to people, but by and large turns up just before he gives a speech and is swooped out again by his minders and his advisors. So it's difficult to know, but he certainly has been addressing a large number of Irish organisations here in Washington and earlier on in the week in Boston.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by politicians, particularly frontline politicians, who have that degree of shyness, I suppose, because of all the jobs, and many of us, shyness is a condition for a huge proportion of the population, but for people whose whole thrust of their job is to be out there glad-handling people, I've a sneaking further admiration for them in some ways, because they have to battle against that, especially when it's expected of them, and especially when they're always the centre of attention when they walk into a room like that. But the other night, I see, Elaine, he gave a speech, I think it may have been in Boston, and it certainly on paper read like a particularly good speech, and he referenced Gaza, and he made particular mention of the deaths of children in the bombings that's going on there from the Israeli Defence Forces.
Yeah, before I even speak about that, just to pick up on that, the idea of small talk, and, you know, leaders, you don't need to talk about your aunt or your uncle or the rain or the weather with people to be a good politician or a good leader. It probably does help, especially when you're talking to Irish Americans who really want to speak to a real life Irish politician. And it was kind of evident as well that Leo Varadkar just doesn't really like that element of the job. I know he met Joe Kennedy in the JFK library before he gave that rather strong address in Boston. And the best he could come up with was to ask where they'd got the sofas from in the room, to which Joe Kennedy said, I don't have an idea. And I think Joe is actually, from seeing him here on the ground, he's probably the exact opposite of Leo Varadkar, insofar as we were at an Ireland of Funds event, a really prestigious kind of $1,000 a plate, a job, Mick, I have to say, I did not pay for it. The media did not not pay for the meal, but...
Glad to hear that anyway, so the examiner be.
And the Taoiseach was at it, Joe Kennedy was also at it, a multitude of politicians at it. The Taoiseach made a quick enough getaway after the meal, but Joe Kennedy was there, and there was a conveyor belt of people coming up to him, wanting to shake his hand, get the selfie, talk to him in the room. And he really was enjoying that part of the job. So you do have politicians who love it, and then others who just simply recoil when they have to do that kind of small talk and chatter. And I think Leo Varadkar is certainly the latter rather than the former.
Yeah, just before leaving that, Elaine, when you talk about, and I suppose at the other end of the spectrum is somebody like Bill Clinton, whom, and I heard this even from people who had met him here afterwards, that in public he absolutely adores the crowd, he adores meeting people, but in private he's very withdrawn and all that sort of thing. It's kind of the opposite case. And then you have the likes of Bertie Ahern, who was fantastic at that whole glad handling and revelled in it. But it takes all types, I suppose.
It does. And there's different styles in every job, in every walk of life. And the Taoiseach has his own style. And it's certainly not the Enda Kenny style of shaking the hands and talking about the man with the 2 pints that he'd met the night before, or the 3 pints. I can't remember how many pints he had in his hand. But certainly I don't think Leo Varadkar will be coming back from Washington or Boston with very many personal anecdotes he has gleaned from regular Joes, shall we say.
Yeah, and that speech, how did that go down, Elaine? First of all, how was it delivered? Did it come across?
Yeah, well, as you said, the speech was very strong, especially when you're talking to a US audience. You know, we certainly, when it comes to the Israel-Palestine issue, have a different outlook to the US, even to our EU counterparts. And he mentioned the fact that the world will become infinitely less secure if we fail to place an equal value on the lives of Palestinian children and Israeli children, and mentioned, you know, that when thousands of children in Palestine are being killed, no one can avert their eyes. So on paper, it certainly read like a very, very strong speech. I don't think the room really helped. It was a large, echoey room, and there wasn't, certainly didn't get any sort of round of applause, didn't get any standing ovation when he made those remarks, which perhaps is a sign of how things are viewed over here. But I felt personally that maybe it was a very powerful speech on paper. Perhaps the delivery could have been slightly stronger, but I suppose you would imagine the Taoiseach is probably slightly nervous of making those remarks in any room in the United States, given the strong pro-Israel lobby that exists in the United States.
Yeah, and just on that theme, I mean, you're there in Washington, the so-called political media bubble, whatever you want to call it, but quite obviously everybody hyper-clued in to issues of the day, political issues of the day. And I'm just wondering, Elaine, even since you're over there, do you get a sense that in general terms there's a very different take, perhaps even in coverage and in the tone of coverage, of what's going on in Gaza compared to what there is, particularly here, but in Europe in general?
Yeah, certainly. And I think the Taoiseach as well was asked about that, because he, after that initial speech in Boston in the JFK Library, he's made a number of other speeches, as I said already. He's on the speech circuit, some of which didn't mention Israel, Gaza or Ukraine at all. We're playing to an Irish audience, an Irish-American audience. St. Patrick was brought up in one of the speeches. And at that Ireland Funds dinner as well, he did mention what is going on in Palestine, but certainly didn't mention the killing of children, the death toll. It was he used the word starvation. He used the term humiliation in relation to Palestinian civilians, which I think certainly members of the Irish media picked up on as being slightly strange, or certainly not the word that he would be previously using, especially in Ireland. So I think that is something that he's aware of. And I think when questioned by the Irish media afterwards, he did acknowledge that, yes, the tone is very important. And depending on where you are, even if that's speaking to his counterparts in Europe, but certainly speaking to people here, you have to get the tone right. He said he wouldn't be watering down his message now, and that people in the US are very aware of how Ireland feels on this issue. But he did then go on to say the tone is very important and you have to make sure that people listen to you when you're speaking. So perhaps he's conscious that if he does go too far with the rhetoric, that people will just switch off completely in the room.
Yeah, it is interesting. And it's particularly interesting in the context of, you know, calls there were for the Taoiseach in particular and Irish ministers in general who've gone to various cities in the US to reconsider, and in the context too of the artists from this country who've decided not to go to the South by Southwest Festival in Texas. Thinking of Kneecap, Gavin James, Mick Flannery, and there are others as well. I think all the Irish who were supposed to go didn't go. And one element to that, Elaine, first of all, is it registering at all in terms of the Irish artists who are refusing to go to South by Southwest? And what would your take be on the idea that, for example, if Leo Varadkar had decided not to go to Washington, the kind of response there would have been to that kind of a gesture?
Yeah, well, you can imagine that would be seen as a very large snub over here in Washington, and you'd imagine that invitation might be rescinded permanently. So I suppose there is a longer term element that the government has to look at in relation to this. And even if you remember back to when Donald Trump was elected for the first time, there was actually suggestions that he might not extend that annual invitation, and people in government buildings were very concerned that strong tradition that we have of getting into rooms even very large countries don't have access to, that might stop. So I think the government, it was never a really consideration that Leo Varadkar would boycott the White House or not travel to Washington. And you even see Mary Lou MacDonald, she's here at the moment. Michelle O'Neill is here, and actually Emma Little Pengelly, Deputy First Minister, is here. And actually, as a side note, the two women, First Leader and Deputy First Leader, were on stage together at that Ireland Funds event in Washington this week. They received a standing ovation. They were extremely well received in the US. So you can see that there's a real support amongst, I suppose, US movers and shakers for the peace process. And people are very, very enthused by the fact that the assembly is up and running, and really were wishing the two women well when they spoke on stage and afterwards as well. But as I said, you know, Sinn Féin have had very strong opinions on the Palestinian issue for a long number of years. They're still here. Mary Lou is still here. I think she's getting a good bit of grief at home from what I can see around that, with a lot of people coming out saying they won't vote for Sinn Féin again because they have rolled back on what is seen as a core policy of theirs by attending the White House and by attending all of these events in Washington this week. So I think if Sinn Féin are willing to come to Washington, it really wasn't on the agenda or wasn't a topic of discussion for Fine Gael.
Yeah, it's interesting that about Sinn Féin, that you think their base to some extent could be under attack because of literally this aspect, because there's no doubt the leadership has been more vocal than other parties in terms of condemning Israel, but because they decided to go to America, a certain element of their base won't stomach it.
Yeah, and there's a big movement you can see on social media of people who are really angered by what is going on in Gaza right now, and didn't want the Taoiseach in Washington, didn't want any Irish representation in Washington this year for the St. Patrick's Day events, and certainly didn't want to see Sinn Féin there, and are saying that, you know, a party that has called for the Israeli ambassador in Dublin to be removed, and who a party which has the Palestinian ambassador at their ordesh, shouldn't be attending these events given the role the stance the US has taken in relation to Israel and Gaza.
Yeah, that is interesting. And it's, I suppose, in some ways related to the polls to some extent, that Sinn Féin's continual upward trajectory since 2020 has been arrested. And that feeds into a time when you've issues such as this, along with wider immigration issues in this country, that it can't just be a question of presenting yourself as a better manager and presenting alternative plans. And in fairness, a lot of alternative plans make a lot of sense. But it is interesting that these kind of issues are coming to the fore at this stage of the electoral cycle. And I mentioned the artist. Has that even registered there?
It has, I think, because the Irish artist, you mentioned Kneecap, and then a list of, I think it's around 12 artists now, have said they're going to boycott the South by Southwest event, which, you know, it's a big sacrifice for those artists. The event itself is a massive platform for any artist to have in the US. So to say that they're not going to do that is a significant decision for anyone to do. But I think since then we've had around 60 artists from all over the world who said that they won't be attending. So the Irish are leading the way in this. Now we do know Catherine Martin still attended. Leo Varadkar was again asked here in Washington about it. He said that the government does not take a boycott stance and does not encourage, you know, whether it's artists, sports people, workers, to boycott. He doesn't believe boycotting is the right approach in this instance. So sticking by his minister. But I think certainly the Irish have led the way. Now, I think there's around 2,000 artists and performers at that festival, so it still is a small number in comparison to the overall scale of the event. But still, it has been noted and has been registered. I think I saw it on, even Al Jazeera has picked up on it in recent days, so it is going beyond the Irish media.
And I suppose it's easy to, particularly in Europe, for us to forget just the sheer size of the USA, and I mean in terms of its political culture, in terms of its economy, in terms of the fact only a small proportion of people even possess passports, that they'd ever have a wish to go outside the country on any basis, that even though much of the rest of the world is so exercised about this, there is a particular line within the American mainstream political culture, notwithstanding there's someone on the left of the Democratic Party who have issues, and who, if they don't come out to vote, could be cost Biden dearly in terms of the presidential election. But I think it's easy for us to sometimes forget that it is in some ways so insular that really, irrespective of the high emotions in places like here, that they can quite easily sail on by.
Yeah, and it's a country, but it's a continent, so it's akin to comparing it to the entirety of Europe. You know, what the stance that Germany has taken is worlds apart from our stance, and is completely different, let's say, from the Spanish, from the Belgians, from the French, on what is a really emotive and a divisive issue. And I think America is exactly like that. Only we tend to sometimes view it as a homogenous country, when it really isn't. You know, you go South Coast, East Coast, and then the centre, and they're just worlds apart. The demographics are completely different. Even within cities, you know, you can have a completely different view depending on what part of a state or city you live in. And even culturally, it's incredibly diverse. So I think we do think of perhaps the US, especially when you're talking about politics, as Washington, but Washington is really just essentially an island in itself, or a little microcosm that is very different to swathes of the US.
Yeah, definitely.
To know what's really happening, subscribe to the Irish Examiner today at irishexaminer.com/subscribe.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Now, I know it's not on the agenda there, but I'm just wondering, because it was pretty, Sunday that Leo Varadkar went over. The aftermath of the referendums, are you getting any vibe there about how it's being taken by the Taoiseach? Is there anything drifting across about the kind of fallout from it?
Yeah, well, I think certainly towards the start of the week, the Taoiseach was asked repeatedly about it, and he had a bit of a swipe at Senator Lisa Chambers over her admission that she voted no. He basically said he was confused and couldn't understand why anyone would come out after the event to claim victory, and I suppose questioning would she have done the same, would she have come out and gone on radio and said how she voted if that vote had not gone her way. And I think obviously you've seen other politicians who've come out and admitted that they voted no while canvassing for a yes, or essentially went against the government. It has rumbled on. I think there will be questions to be asked, and I'd be interested to be a fly in the wall at the first leaders' meeting when all three leaders come back from various parts of the world after St. Patrick's Day, and they, I suppose, discuss in a room together what exactly went wrong, what happened. I think the Green Party are feeling particularly exposed about this, and perhaps the other two larger parties didn't canvass as hardly or as strongly as they could have, and took a kind of a hands-off approach to it and just let it take its course, essentially, and that course went against the government. But it is interesting that there were certainly pointed remarks made by the Taoiseach about Fianna Fáil members who came out. Essentially, he's saying he wouldn't have done it himself. If he had advocated for a no vote, he wouldn't vote no. If he'd advocated for a yes vote, he'd vote yes. He wouldn't tell the public one thing and do something else in the privacy of the ballot box. And he certainly wouldn't be announcing it after the event. So I think that's perhaps a point of tension that we may see, especially coming up to elections, when all of the parties are trying to find differences between each other that they can sell to the electorate.
Yeah, no, I'd just be interested in your take on this, Elaine. We saw, like, for instance, okay, Willie O'Dea came out, and he's playing to the woke gallery. Eamon O'Caoimh, I don't think anybody would be too surprised at that. Niamh Smith, people would be a bit surprised. John McGuinness, and to be fair to John McGuinness, to the best of my knowledge, he signalled before the referendum day that he was going to vote against it. So fair enough, off you go. The others, they come out afterwards. Now, on top of that, as you said, Lisa Chambers, who came out and said she voted no, and then photographs began appearing of her canvassing 2 weeks beforehand in, I think it was in Grafton Street, where she was actually campaigning for a yes. It wasn't just a question of the party line was going, she was actually campaigning. Now, the thing that strikes me about that, Elaine, is I would say normally these referendums don't tend to have much implications for the wider political firmament, and particularly coming up to elections. However, in this instance, an element, I think, that contributed to the no vote was that the voters were being asked to place a high degree of trust in the government, that the wording would be all right and everything would be sorted, and they decided, no, we do not trust you. And in that context, it's one thing for people to be coming out afterwards and saying they voted the opposite of what people would have presumed they voted. That's one element in terms that would go to trust. But Lisa Chambers, and she's a very able politician, To do so, having campaigned visibly for a yes, you'd have to wonder, would there be any repercussions for her with the electorate in that sense?
It does, especially when she is running for election at this point in time. It kind of, some might say, it has a whiff of she saw which way the wind was blowing and then she decided to go with that I don't know how it'll pan out. There's a long way to go before election day, the European elections being held in June. But another element that the Taoiseach did pick up on is this thing of confusion. And I think a number of politicians who've come out and said that they did vote no, including Lisa Chambers, have said there was confusion around this. And I think Lisa Chambers pointed to the fact that when she read that leaked advice from the Attorney General, that cemented her decision to vote no. What the Taoiseach said on that is, and he has a point, whatever about the public not being fully aware or not being across it, perhaps until the dying moments or towards the end of the campaign. Politicians are paid to do this. They're paid to examine legislation, laws, proposals, policy, and that the wording was made public, was published well in advance of this referendum. It's, as I said, the one job of politicians is to look at this type of thing, to explore it, to pick it apart, to question it, and to raise questions if they do have any significant concerns. And as far as we know, Lisa Chambers or others didn't raise any concerns around this at the weekly parliamentary party meetings of the Fianna Fáil party, for example. She said she hadn't raised it as well with Tánaiste the Mícheál Martin ahead of the vote. So there's questions to be asked there as to why, if they were so confused, that this wasn't raised at party or government level in advance, and that they're just kind of coming out after the event.
The other thing is, it's not just the government. We're talking about the whole political system, bar a few independents, and in terms of parties, AM2, which is only one TD. So you're talking about the vast majority of the Dáil were backing a referendum that ultimately suffered the largest defeat in any referendum. It doesn't look good for the political culture as a whole. Or would that be reading too much into it?
Yeah, and I think another part of it is, look, it was a very lacklustre campaign. I know I don't know about you, Mick, but I saw very few posters up.
No.
Don't think I got any leaflets from any political party in the door. When you compare and contrast that to the likes of the Eighth Amendment referendum or even marriage equality, it was, you know, the place was plastered with posters, and we were definitely getting literature through the doors as well. And I think that comes down to June. People want to save their money for the election posters for the locals and Europeans, and probably the general elections that will come soon afterwards. They don't want to be spending, or didn't want to be spending, a load of money on getting printed leaflets or posters when they'll be needing that money, as I said, for probably what they think is a more important poll, the locals, the Europeans and the generals. So there was a bit of that to it too. Sinn Féin, again, going back to Mary Lou McDonald's party, I think they really didn't know what way to play this. I think they were reluctant. They came out, it was quite late in the day when they decided and made it clear which way they'd be voting. And then, of course, Mary Lou McDonald said that she, if her party does enter government after the next general election, would rerun it because, you know, she wasn't fully happy with the wording and what the government were proposing. And then literally hours after the poll, we had the walk back from Matt Carthy, who said, actually, we probably won't do that, or we won't be doing that if in government. So, as I said, I don't think you can just blame the government on this. It was a bad day out for the coalition parties who put this question to the people, or two questions to the people, but other opposition parties, whether it's Labour, the Social Democrats, Sinn Féin, we're all on the losing side in this instance. The only party in the Dáil was AIMTU, who have one TD in Pádraig Tobin, was the only party who was voting or who was advocating for a no-no vote.
One other final element to it, Elaine. There's also been a reaction, and this term that I hate using that is completely misrepresented and misused, woke. We've heard that Willie O'Dea, of course, referred to playing to the woke gallery, and other people have used it. And inherent in it is a suggestion that the referendum was a part of an agenda to pander to what some people see as a very left-wing sort of social justice in one form and what have you kind of an agenda. I'd be very suspicious about all that myself, whether there's any substance to that. But I think it definitely has got some traction, particularly in some elements of the political class. And in that vein, one thing strikes me, and that is the hate crime and hate speech bill that's due to go through the Oireachtas. Now, people would put that, some people would put that in the same bracket, using that W word, and describe it thus. And I just wonder, has the result, in your opinion, pushed out the possibility that that bill will go through the Oireachtas in this Dáil term?
Yeah, well, like all other bills, I think the government is under pressure. That clock is ticking. Helen McEntee was recently asked about this, and she said she's committed to getting it through the Dáil in the lifetime of this government. But as I said, she's a lot of other issues on her plate as well, a lot of other legislation to get through. And it does need to go back into the Seanad, where we do know that senators are concerned about it, shall we say. When you go back to the word woke, it has become a buzzword or nearly even a slur that's used for a whole myriad of items. But, you know, I think to be using a woke brigade in the context of the removal of what was described as sexist and archaic language, the removal of that women in the home clause, is a bit mad when consider that people have probably been campaigning for about 30 years to have the women in the home clause removed, long before the woke brigade were even born, let alone the term being used in public discourse. So in this instance, but I think it is a term that's just, as I said, bandied about almost as a slur by a certain group.
Completely, and it, even in relation to the referendum, I agree with you completely that it's ludicrous to put it in that context. Yet, not only do we have Irish politicians and people in the media referencing the referendum in that term, I see there that there's a columnist in the Daily Telegraph referenced the Irish referendum and the how it was a defeat for woke or whatever. But all of that's for another day. As far as politics is concerned, Elaine, we're back to bread and butter issues next week. Final thing, has your opinion altered at all in terms of when we can expect the general election as a result of this referendum? Will it give pause for thought? Or, and my own opinion, I'd be interested in yours, the most likely period now would still seem to be after the budget around October. Has that changed at all as a result of the referendum?
I don't think so, because I think referendums are unique ballots. They're not reflective. Well, sometimes they can be used as a way to give the government a kicking, maybe. But I think, by and large, people deal with the issue. It's not seen as something, and especially this referendum, where, as we said before, only a few minutes ago, all parties bar one was in favour and was advocating for a yes vote in this. So if we think that it was people kind of using their vote to send a message, well, they were sending a message to both the opposition and the government. So I'm not sure what sort of message. Are they just anti-politicians in general? I'm not sure. The Taoiseach was asked about this as well during the week, and he said that, look, there won't be a general election before the locals and Europeans. So we can breathe a sigh of relief about that, that we're not gearing up for a general election before June. But anything is possible, I think, in the coming months. I think the money is still on an autumn election. But as I said, when you get to this time of a government's life cycle, you're really on borrowed time, I think.
Elaine, as always, thank you very much. Safe journey back across the Atlantic. Elaine Loughlin, political editor of the Irish Examiner. Thanks for talking to us today.
Thanks, Mick.
As always, I want to thank our engineer, JJ Vernon. Thank you, folks, for listening. Enjoy your break over the Patrick's Bank holiday weekend. Stand by the wall, and we'll be back with you next week.